You're listening to Radio Caravan with host Scott Hayes, healthy lifestyle coach Jill Harvey, and sound engineer April Johnson.
Come on.
All right, you're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is Radio Caravan. Always, we like to remind you that Radio Caravan is on Cox TV Channel 3, reaches 250,000 cable subscribers in Orange County and Palos Verdes. It airs tonight, 8 p.m. and 12 noon on Sundays. I think the show that's running this weekend is the stem cell therapy show that we did several weeks back or so. Hey, also with me is my co-host Jim Bastian. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm great, man. Are you on the mic? Is he on the mic?
I'm on the mic now.
There he is. You want to talk about anything going on in your life this morning?
Big day.
Big day.
SC-UCLA game.
There you go.
Yeah, those of you don't know, I'm a big Bruin alumnus.
Huge!
I'm wearing my shirt today. You know, I have I'm superstitious, so game day, I got to put this on.
Yeah.
First thing, so I'm here in my Bruin gear. We're leaving from here to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Got about 45 people out for a big tailgate today.
Ooh.
Bunch of fraternity brothers of mine, you know, haven't seen some guys in 10, 15 years.
Oh, that'll be fun.
So it's appropriate that we're going to be talking about scotch today.
I was just going to say.
I think Jill's going to tell us about the benefits
and
burdens of alcohol consumption, which there will be some of that going on
today. I was just going to ask. There'll be a little bit of that going on today.
I've got the keg on ice in my car.
Right? Do you really?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's not. It's in my wife's car. We'll be pulling that up. We picked it up last night at BevMo.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's a keg cost these days?
That's actually kind of funny you say that, because I went in and I was like, gosh, you know, I haven't bought a keg in a while. Back in the fraternity, they used to deliver them. So it's $140 for a full barrel of Coors Light, but then you've got to put up a $140 deposit
for the
tap and the keg and the tub and all that stuff. So yeah, it's about $140.
And you're a Coors Light guy?
On a game day.
Okay, gotcha.
It's basically water.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you just pull a few of those back.
So. I like drinking Coors Light, actually.
I'll usually mix in, you know, a craft brew or two, you know, to kind of lay a foundation and then, you know, just roll with the Coors Lights all day.
Yeah, beautiful, man. So you're going to have a good day. I'm jealous. And, of course, we've got a alumni coming in after the second break, I believe. Yeah.
Legend from the wooden era, John Valley.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to that since you've announced it. So that's going to be great. Hey, also in the room, we have Miss Kieran Muiz.
Good morning, Scott.
How are you, young lady?
I'm doing amazing.
Great. Well, you look amazing. What's going on in the art world?
In the art world? Well, just last night, ACMA collaborated, Orange County Museum of Art.
Thank you.
Clarified. They did a pop-up show in Costa Mesa. Uh-huh. And I'm really excited because now the art scene's just kind of getting out of the museums and into the street. We're taking it to the streets, everybody.
Yeah.
And some of the participants. Well,
what is a pop-up?
A pop-up show is basically outdoors. They just take over spaces.
I see.
And this was around the lab, the camp area.
Gotcha.
Artery was one of the organizations, Dax Gallery, Mesa Lounge, Jamie Brooks Fine Art, and I'm friends with them on Twitter. We follow each other. Mm-hmm. So that means we can send secret messages to
each other. Okay, so what's the secret message?
They sent me a lot of great images of the indoors. Like, they took over a warehouse, and they just had people live painting on the streets. And our gallery is actually going to participate because, you know, we're in Costa Mesa.
Right.
And so the next event's going to be in April. And we have a pop-up. We have actually a mobile art gallery in addition to walls. So we're going to be out there with the artists. But they did some fantastic sketches, drawings. Everything's for sale. Hmm. It was just incredible. And, of course, just in time for the holidays where everyone's looking for those last-minute Christmas gifts.
So where can somebody go? I mean, where should somebody find this?
The website is canvascostamesa.squarespace.com.
Okay.
So you could look up last night's show and then kind of get all the information to be prepared for the next event.
Okay.
It's going to be great.
And there are images online that people can purchase if they're interested?
I'm sure. Or you could reach out to the galleries individually, and I'm sure they've got a portfolio of all the artists.
That sounds fun.
Fantastic. And a lot of the galleries in that area are known for street art. So if you're a fan of street art, it's the place to be.
That sounds great. And is there anything coming up?
Yes. Amazing things are happening with Thanksgiving coming around the corner. The training spot in Huntington Beach, which is run by Paul and Carolyn Fetters, are actually having a really great boot camp event the day of Thanksgiving. Show up with a canned good at 9 a.m. and you get a complimentary boot camp session for an hour in exchange for that.
This is health and fitness stuff, right?
Yeah, boot camp? So, you know, kicking your butt in gear before you gorge on all that great turkey and everything. And then one of the organizations I'm a part of, because I'm just an anomaly. I'm one of the very few people in Orange County who can say they're part of NextGen OC, which is a Jewish Young Professionals organization. They're actually meeting here in Laguna Beach for a post-Turkey Day kickoff. So it's a hike at the top of the world. They're meeting at the top of the world at about 10 a.m. on Sunday, November the 30th. So you can go to the boot camp in Huntington Beach and then work it out after.
I love it.
And there's also, a nonprofit development session by BPOC Orange County. I was a part of that.
Yeah.
I'll also be speaking at their January 15th event.
So. Beautiful. You're a busy person.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Always on the run.
Nice. Miss Karen, thank you very much, young lady.
Thank you.
Appreciate all the time. And, of course, thank you, Cyrus, with the golf clap. And, of course, Miss Jill Harvey's in the room, our
Good
healthy
morning.
Lifestyle coach. And I think you have something unique today, yes?
Well, it's unique, but I think it's very fitting considering one of the topics,
okay.
right,
yeah.
which is whiskey. And it's the pros and cons of alcohol consumption. So, Scott, do you drink much?
Not much, but a little.
Jim?
Jim's a drinker.
I'm not a... Well,
today.
Today will be. Last night we had some friends over, had some wine, you know. Social drinker, how's that?
Social drinking is fine, but, you know, we're going to still watch this. So we...
But when the hesitation sort of gave you away, Jim.
I'm Irish.
Fair enough. All right.
Then we're done. We're done. That's it. So the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health do show there are benefits to consuming alcohol.
Right.
So... anyway, pardon me one second. Can you hear me on the mic?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry. He wants me to step over. That's cute. Okay. So anyway, when we talk about drinking in moderation.
In the way? Yeah.
So in moderation. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm back. So drinking in moderation, right? Not overconsumption. So moderation would mean 12-ounce beer, 5 ounces of wine. That's it. Have you ever seen 5 ounces of wine?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never...
Probably less than that. That's really sad and pathetic.
Serious?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. And 1.5 ounces of your hard liquor, whiskey, bourbon, you know, gin, whenever you
scotch.
Have that, scotch, all of those. Yes. And so it's really sad. But women, we only get one a day. Men, you can have two. That's moderation. And these studies are continually ongoing. So we do have, knowing there are benefits, we don't suggest drinking because of the benefits. If you're not drinking, don't start. It also shows protection of the heart. So reduced risk of heart attack, reduced risk of stroke, also protection from diabetes. There's a study that the fat cells are releasing some kind of protectant from insulin, but that's again in moderation.
Right.
And then we also have, the resveratrol, so longevity, and they're showing people are living longer that drink.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, but again, in moderation.
Something to look forward to.
Well, he's hesitating. He's hesitating again. So we like that. But the cons we have to look at are your family history. If, of course, you have alcoholism.
Right.
Or liver disease, you want to stay away
sure.
from alcohol.
Of course.
If you are pregnant, stay away because fetal alcohol syndrome is horrible. Mm. The birth defects are terrible. Increased risk of cancer and diseases. So much as it has a decreased risk, it also has an increased risk when you increase your consumption, right? So we want to stay away from that. There's also approximately 88,000 deaths from overconsumption of alcohol per year.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it.
See that?
Yeah, sure.
You know, alcohol poisoning, thinking of people, you know, who binge on the weekends. So you can't have 7 drinks in one night and say I made up for the whole week.
Right.
You know, you can't do that. And sorry.
If
that's going to happen today, and I don't want to hear about
you're
it on the news,
you're bringing Jim down right now.
I know. The other thing we're looking at, Jim, calories.
Yeah,
the
agree.
Calories.
I agree.
So you have your beer is about 150 calories per...
Not Coors Light.
Okay,
yeah. Coors Light,
right.
A little different. It's water.
You can have that. 5 ounces of wine, about 100 calories, and your ounce and a half, that shot, about 100 calories. So say you're out drinking all night and you're having 3 drinks, that's 300 calories.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Well,
but if you're dancing while you're doing it.
There you go, you're burning the calories.
Burning the calories.
Okay, well, I'll have to go out and try that. But it also lowers your inhibition. So you're going to say,
yes,
hey.
That's why we
I'm
do
gonna,
it.
Well, and like Mitch, I was asking him, where's his kilt? Because I've heard it shows, you know, that they will show you what's under their kilt when they drink too much.
Well, we haven't been introduced to Mitch yet.
Yeah, so.
So he's coming
It's
up.
Just impaired thinking, impaired judgment.
Yeah.
So just watching all those things. So when are we all going out drinking?
Jim?
I think we're starting in about 3 minutes.
We are. So actually what we're going to do, we're going to take a 1 minute, if not less, break. We're going to kind of rearrange the room in here, set up the cameras in a different way. We've got a new segment coming on the radio show that I'm looking forward to. We're back in 60 seconds. April, do you want to take us out of here? This is KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM, Radio Caravan.
Something hit me deep on my sunset walk through the streets. Well, I could see and hear, but I couldn't feel or breathe. From tuning out the static world, I've lost the sense of peace. And that's not alright by me. The LA Times and Channel 5 and New York Magazine, they're staining my soul, and I know what I mean. They tear apart the hopeful heart till it doesn't bleed or dream, and that's not alright by me. Pull on the road that lifts the sun back to the sky. Hold a hand, cry on a shoulder. Whistle in the wind and open up your eyes and feel again, feel again. Where the roads cross and time stands still, I'm frozen in my tracks against my will. The street light is dimming and it won't shine again until I say it's not alright by me.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This, of course, is Radio Caravan. And that was Vintage Trouble. Do I have that right, April?
Yes, you do.
Vintage Trouble, which they've sort of been introduced to us just recently. And seems like everybody in this room was sort of enjoying that music. I know when I looked them up, I thought, these guys are phenomenal.
Yeah, they are.
Vintage Trouble. Did I say that enough times? Vintage Trouble, just in case nobody heard. Once more, Vintage Trouble. Hey, we've got a new segment on this program starting today, and I'm not even sure exactly how to introduce this. So what I'm going to do is introduce our new food stalker, Sandy Ward. Golf clap here for Sandy. First time here. And Sandy, talk to us a little bit about who you are and what you do and sort of, you know, why you're here.
Well, first of all, I've been the girl behind the glass holding up papers of, you know, obscenities and cracking everybody up. So it's really cool to be inside the studio today. So thanks for having me. I'd like to give a shout out to Jill Harvey Kirkland, my girl, for making this happen.
Yeah.
The Food Stalker is a blog that started about 3 years ago, and it's where food and fashion collide. I'm catching trains, planes, and automobiles and all my zany crazy.
I think there's a movie there somewhere.
To get to the next
food. Those aren't
food
pillows.
Story. And basically, I want to go to Oz like Dorothy did, and I want to take you with me. So,
right. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, just an aha moment, a story that inspires me, and I'm, you know, off and running to get to the story. Just for a visual for you folks and listeners out there, if Anthony Bourdain and Rachel Zoe had a child, it would be me. I love food as much as I love fashion.
Beautiful. So, I love that.
www.thefoodstalker.com.
Hey, that sounds like self-promotion to me.
That's how you can find it. And I stalked Wolfgang Puck, David Lynch, Virginia Pastrell, who is a brilliant author who wrote a book called The Power of Glamour.
the founder of New York Fashion Week, and anything else that inspires me.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let me stop you here. April, are you getting good sound with her? Because I feel like it's soft.
I'm as loud as we can go.
Okay, stay close on that mic then, if you don't mind, Sandy.
Will do.
Yeah, so talk to us about this event you attended recently and who our guest is, because Jim and I have been looking forward to this all week.
Well, I've been looking forward to it as well. Mitch and I met. I was contributing editor for Luxury Marketing Council.
Mitch, and how do you say Mitch's last name?
Mitch Bichard.
Bichard, gotcha.
U.S. Ambassador for Glenfiddich Whiskey in the house. And I was assigned to do a photo shoot and was sort of given carte blanche to select how we're going to interview this guy, Mitch. Should it be in an office? Should it be out in the field? And we thought, you know what, let's just pull a jet out of our bum and do this thing on a private jet. So we met at 10:30 in the morning out at Long Beach Airport, JFI Jet. Fred C. is the gentleman who coordinated this.
Wait, he was traveling in a jet?
No, this was at the hangar.
Oh, gotcha.
This was
okay.
At the hangar for a photo shoot. And up shows, you know, Mitch shows up, this hot guy in a kilt with glasses in one hand and bottles of whiskey in the other. So what did you think of that experience?
Everybody's
Mitch?
Best friend.
No, that was fantastic.
Oh, welcome, by the way, Mitch.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
No, that was a great experience. You know, it's not every day that I get to sit in a jet, and I think we drank some Glenfiddich 40-year-old that day as well. That was quite nice.
It was quite smooth.
not a shabby day in the office.
It was quite smooth. And I want to point out the jet was outside when we got there, and it was in the blazing sun. So I somehow finagled that they took one jet from inside the hangar to outside, and they hauled our jet inside just so you could get some Gucci shots.
Beautiful. Hey, you know, what's an ambassador? What does that mean exactly for those who don't know?
So my job, as you can tell from my accent, you know, I am from Texas originally.
Yeah, right.
No, I came all the way over from Scotland just to talk about Glenfiddich Scotch whiskey.
Yeah.
So I'm employed directly by the distillery to talk about Glenfiddich. So my day-to-day job, I suppose I don't really have a day-to-day job. That's the great thing about my job. Every day is completely different. So to give you an example, over the last couple of weeks, I've been in Arizona, Seattle twice, LA, San Diego, and Vegas. Oh, and then Hawaii as well.
Yeah.
About that one. So I travel around a lot. I talk about Glenfiddich to bars, to restaurants. I do, you know, radio interviews like this, and a lot of nice events and tastings.
Does this make you an expert?
I suppose I am. Yeah.
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 I mean, is there training to become an expert, or is this something you sort of learn by trade?
So, well, my background's hospitality. I was in the hospitality industry for 15 years. Uh-huh. I worked for another big drink company for 5 years,
right.
And then I've been working for Glenfiddich for the last 4 years.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It's,
And so what are we here to talk about then exactly?
What would be some exciting, surreal experiences that you've had as a U.S. ambassador?
You know, I've actually had one surreal experience that was actually a whole week that it lasted for. So it started off, I went up to Aspen. I was snowboarding in Aspen, and we were doing a load of tastings on the mountain and a load of events on the mountain.
I love Aspen, yeah.
That was pretty cool. And then we'd actually partnered up with the luxury car company Bentley.
Uh-huh.
So I got to drive a wee Bentley convertible around about Aspen for half a day, which was quite nice. And
that's
we
beautiful.
Did a bit of ice racing with it as well. Obviously, I wasn't doing that part of it.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
A driver in there. And then I jumped on a plane, and I flew to the to New York. And in New York, we'd actually hired out the Statue of Liberty, which I didn't know you could do, but we did it.
Glenfiddich can do that.
Yeah, we had a party on the Statue of Liberty, which celebrated our 125th year of being a family-run independent distillery.
Oh, wow. It's a family-run business.
Absolutely.
That's the Quasqua Centennial.
Yeah.
Is that right, Jim? I didn't know.
I learned that.
Every day's a school day, right?
Exactly. And by the way, they pay you for this?
Yeah, I get paid
for want that job.
Mitch is the liquid-to-lips king.
The lip...
But yeah, to finish off that crazy week, we auctioned off a 55-year-old bottle of Glenfiddich there, and I stuck my hand up at $93,000 for I was bidding for someone at the time.
You,
and that bottle went for $94,000.
You were bidding for somebody $93,000 for one bottle,
yeah,
and that was a private person you were bidding for?
Yes.
Wow. And so why would somebody spend apparently $94,000 for one bottle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Scotch is a great thing to collect. A lot of people get really passionate about it and have huge collections of Scotch whiskey.
I mean, but do they end up, I mean, this is way off topic here, so forgive me, but do they end up actually pouring it and drinking it at some point in their lives, or do they just sort of collect it?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I
always say to people, if you're going to collect it, buy one to drink and buy one to collect. Obviously, if you're talking about $94,000, it gets a little bit hard.
Yeah, sure. Well, we were talking before the break that down here at Maestro's, was it Maestro's down here that we were talking? That they have a shot for $1,500.
Well, Maestro's have a Glenfiddich that is $1,500, which is our 50-year-old Glenfiddich.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's only 6 bottles of them come into the U.S. every year.
Really?
Yeah, if you can get hold of them, it's a bargain at $30,000 a bottle.
And is there a big difference in the flavors at a 50, you know, I'm not an expert here, but as a $1,500 shot versus a $40 shot?
You know, I mean, I always say to everyone that age isn't always everything.
Uh-huh.
My analogy is I compare it to human beings. We all know a human being that hasn't matured very well.
Right.
Sometimes Scotch whiskey could be the same way. So it's going to be a lot more expensive when it's older because it's been kept in cask for that amount of time.
Right.
You know, it takes us a long time to mature this Scotch whiskey, and it's obviously going to be very rare as well at that point. But don't always go for the numbers on the label. It's about what you like and what you enjoy.
Jim, are you a Scotch guy at all?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I was telling Mitch before we came on that I've kind of been partial to Macallan over time, and I haven't been a big Glenfiddich guy. He's going to try to...
Well, he don't want to hear that.
So, but tell me if you can, like the difference between a Glenfiddich from a Macallan and then, you know, onward to the other whiskeys that are out there.
What separates yours from the others? Yeah.
Here's the great thing. I always say if people are drinking Scotch whiskey, I'm a happy man. If they're drinking Glenfiddich, then it's a bonus. You know, we are honestly a happy community within the Scotch industry. And
you're all drunk, so of course you are.
Yeah, well, to give you an example, I was
he's
out.
Not drunk now.
I was out in Seattle on, when was it, Thursday night, and I was out with the Highland Park ambassador. We were having a couple of drams together, you know. So it really is, we are one big happy family. So we never say that one Scotch is better than the other. I always compare it to your music collection. Depends what you want to put on, what you want to listen to. It's the same with Scotch whiskey. There's so many different flavors out there. It's really about what you want to enjoy at that point in time. What I will say about Glenfiddich is it is family run. We've been independent for the last 126 years. It's the most awarded single malt Scotch whiskey in the world, and it's also the most popular. So we got 3 things that are pretty cool about Glenfiddich.
That's very cool. Yeah.
And maybe a good question, too, for those who don't know, you know, how is whiskey made?
Yeah.
Someone asked me that the other day.
It's really simple. When we talk about single malt Scotch whiskey, we take barley. We take that barley, we put it in water, seep it there for around about 3 days. We soften it up because we want to get it to kind of grow, essentially. It starts to grow, and then we put it in a kiln. We heat it up. Now, have you guys ever had a really smoky Scotch whiskey before? You know, the ones that they're kind of like sucking on a bonfire or licking a hospital floor a little bit. It's that kind of characteristic to it.
You don't sell those, do you?
No, well, not every Scotch whiskey is like that. And a lot of people say that they don't like Scotch because it's very smoky. Now, we're going to try some Glenfiddich today,
yeah.
And you're not going to see any smoke in it at all. But where you get that smoke from is when you dry the barley, you add peat to the fire. Now, peat creates smoke, it attaches itself to that barley. We don't do that with Glenfiddich, so there's no smoke in there at all. So after that, we take the malted barley, we grind it down, we essentially add hot water, we add yeast to it, and we create a beer. Now, in Scotland, beer wasn't strong enough, so we had to distill it up. And then we double distill in Scotland. We put it into copper pot stills twice, and then when it comes through, it's not Scotch whiskey. The reason being, it needs to then get aged for a further 3 years.
Huh.
After 3 years, it is officially Scotch whiskey.
Very interesting. So what did we bring to taste this morning?
We got a load of goodies from our 12-year-old to our 15-year-old. I think the one that's very relevant is this one, which is our new release.
That this one or this one?
That's the black.
Okay.
That's the new one that we had the event up at the Sheets Goldstein Residence up in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah, so to explain this is the Glenfiddich 1963 replica. And 1963 is a very important year for us because it was the year that Glenfiddich was first released as a single malt Scotch whiskey.
Huh.
And it was the first time that a single malt was ever commercially available in the market.
Wow, what do you mean replica?
So what we've done is we've looked back at the recipes from 1963 of how we created this Glenfiddich.
Mm-hmm.
Our malt master, Brian Kinsman, also got some of the original liquid, sampled it, and he faithfully recreated this.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is kind of going back in time right now. So Glenfiddich
it was well received at the event.
Should we try
something? Yeah, so walk us through what you're doing there as you pour and kind of talk us through the...
First thing.
Ooh. Oh, no, we like the sound of that.
That's my first favorite sign, and then my second favorite sign is...
enough to go around.
That's beautiful. So here's a little taster. Probably just
it's
three of
too
us.
Early in
Sandy?
The morning. Cheers.
Cheers. April? Probably not.
Sonia,
camera crew?
The sound girl. Yeah.
Cyrus, definitely.
All right, so, I mean, you. I always
say... Uno más, por favor. Uno más, por favor.
One more?
Yeah, please.
Love.
All right.
So walk us through how we should appropriately taste.
Well, you know, the great thing about Scotch whiskey is, especially the single malts, you always want to sip it, you want to enjoy it, you want to take your time on it, okay? So the first thing is really kind of have a look at the color, seeing what's going on the color.
Okay.
Now, what the color is going to tell us about Scotch whiskey is what it's been aged in. With this, we've used quite a lot of sherry casks. 90% of the casks we actually use are from you guys now. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I read that, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So ex-bourbon casks. And you know the reason we use second-hand casks in Scotland? You heard this?
No.
We're a little bit tight with our money. You heard about a Scotsman before?
Oh, okay.
Difference between a Scotsman and a coconut. Eventually, you get a drink out of a coconut.
Those are funny.
So what we want to do is we want to get this nice happy balance between what's going on in the warehouse and what's coming off the still. So we use secondhand casks.
Okay.
That's going to give us that nice balance. So this is predominantly a lot of ex-sherry cask with a little bit of bourbon cask in it. Now, what I love about this Glenfiddich, the next thing we're going to do after we look at the color is we're going to nose it.
Yeah.
See what's going on. There's a lot of different complex flavors that go on in Scotch whiskey, ranging from that smoke that we've talked about already.
Right.
To this nice, delicate style that you're going to get with Glenfiddich.
So tell me what your nose tells you here.
Well, for me, what I always get with this particular Glenfiddich is pear, which is something that is very prevalent throughout
Love
the range.
Pear.
Wow.
You get this nice pear note coming through, nice vanilla kick as well.
Uh-huh.
But nice and easy going.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good one for this time of day.
Beautiful. Do we sip or do we...
Give it a little sip.
Okay.
Roll it around in your palate. Hold it there for a couple of seconds and then swallow it down.
That's nice.
Mm. So what we're getting there is it's quite a nice drying sensation on the mouth.
Isn't that
sweet? Wow, that's
a warming sensation.
Nice? I love that warming sensation.
Perfect
yeah.
for the holidays.
That's called our Scottish central heating right there.
That's beautiful.
So you were really well received up in the Hollywood Hills at the Sheets Goldstein residence. They recently had an event with several hundred people and your band, Vintage Trouble, playing
absolutely.
Up there.
What do you mean your band? Why is that your band?
Because he was responsible for maybe pulling them in. Yeah, how did you decide to have the event there? It's such an epic residence. James Goldstein, of course, is the multi-millionaire. Ardent basketball fashion dude.
That's appropriate for today's show.
But that was really an epic event. People are still talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, and that house was built in 1963. Mm-hmm. So it was an obvious tie-in for us with this Glenfiddich.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a beautiful house. You walk in, it's absolutely stunning. So we wanted that wow factor. We had cars from 1963 that were placed at the house. So
Bond cars.
Yeah, an Aston Martin, a DB5, I think it was, and a Corvette 63. So we tied everything in with 63.
Did you play the Four Seasons?
Sorry?
Did you play the Four Seasons? Oh, What a Night? Back December 1963?
I remember that song.
We're all doing the
You're
mashed
dating yourself
potato.
A little bit, but
doing
I remember.
Doing the mashed potato through the James Brown tunes.
What's next on your agenda then?
You know, this is me. I'm kind of chilling out just now.
Okay.
Yeah, I live up the road, so.
Oh, you do?
I did my last kind of trip on Friday there.
Yeah.
And I've got one trip to Arizona left, but I'm going to be local for the rest of the year. And mm-hmm. that's pretty much me for the rest of the year. So it's quite
so,
I think
so
Mitch needs to go with me to the Rose Bowl.
There you go. He'd be
some American
Let's
football
do it.
Going. And,
should all go.
SC, UCLA, you know, 90,000 people out there. Be a good day.
It would be a good day. It'd be a great day.
And then after
day.
That, come back to my house for pasta, sauce, meatballs, because I cook Italian. So.
Take,
why not?
Take this 26-year-old up and do that in the parking lot.
Absolutely. We'll shotgun it.
For Scotch lovers and non-Scotch lovers, what do you suggest they do if they want to go out and, you know, kind of experience, you know, your palate here?
You know, one of the best things to do is to go to a bar, like we're talking about with Mastro's. Mm-hmm. They've got some great guys there that have got a lot of knowledge mm-hmm. about Scotch whiskey, and just speak to a knowledgeable bartender,
mm-hmm.
And they can really guide you in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I always say to people is think about what you like within your food, within your drink already,
mm-hmm.
And base it off that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, obviously, I'm very biased with Glenfiddich, but Glenfiddich is a great place to start with.
Sounds
and
like
the
it.
Reason for that is what you've just experienced there. Is it's light, it's delicate.
Yeah.
You can drink it without kind of going, you know?
And also, whiskey goes with chocolate really well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love
which a lot
food
of people
pairings.
Might not be aware of.
Yeah. Food pairings are fantastic.
Last question, and it's a weird off-the-wall question. If you don't want to answer it, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. What does the Scotch high feel like if you drink a lot of it? Is it different from wine and beers?
You should
and
be asking me that,
Scott.
Question.
I'd never know that. I always drink responsibly.
Yes, 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 yes. Is there a subtle difference, Jim? Maybe you can answer this. I mean,
you know, if you're drinking good scotch,
yeah,
you're just having a good time.
Gotcha.
You feel warm. You feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You're just enjoying it with a cigar. You know, maybe something like that. The good thing about scotch is you go before dinner.
Yeah.
You can go also after dinner.
So
it's good early and late. A lot of drinks aren't that way. You know, you got to go one or the other.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, it's something you sip, you enjoy. So
yeah. Excellent.
Done responsibly.
Mitch, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for being
here. Round of applause here. Golf clap. Sandy, thank you for doing this, too, by the way.
Great being here. Thank you.
You know, Sandy, I'll say this for the record. You're a great asset to this program, and I'm just so happy that you decided to participate with us because you bring a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of interesting guests. You're reaching out for us on a very unique platform, and we appreciate you're here.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, round of applause for Sandy again. Okay.
Go KX93.5.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM, and we're coming back, and we're going to talk with the legendary UCLA basketball standout NBA star John Vallely, who's here, and we've got a lot of discussion regarding UCLA, Johnny Wooden, some great players, and a lot more. We'll be back in 60 seconds. April, take us out, please.
This is a message and a call. So get up and gather around everyone. I've been withering and dying, trembling from trying, barely crawling. What can I do? What will I do? Nobody told me. Nobody told me. Nobody told me how heavy this life was gonna be. Here stands a silver line believer, not believing. A rosy-eyed dream awakening into a moment when hands are not given to the meeting. What will become of an even one? Nobody told me. Nobody told me. Nobody told me how heavy this life was gonna be. Nobody told me. Nobody told me. No. Nobody told me how heavy this life was gonna be.
Love that music. Nice choice. Nice choice. You're listening to KIX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This, of course, is Radio Caravan. And I'm here with my co-host, Jim Bastian. Jim, what did you think of that last segment? I'm already slurring a little
great
bit.
Great way to start the morning.
Hey, I'm awfully proud to introduce our next guest. If you grew up in Orange County, California, as I did, in the late 60s, early 1970s, you knew this person, John Vallely. He was a standout. He went to Corona Del Mar, right, John?
Correct.
And then you played 2 years at Orange Coast College.
Also correct.
Who was your coach back then, by the way?
Bob Wetzel.
Bob
Wetzel.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, he had a brother, didn't he?
Yes, Bill Wetzel.
Bill Wetzel, who was the vice president over at Estancia High School, I believe.
Right. He was the athletic director there. He was a teacher there. He was a basketball coach.
He was my freshman basketball coach.
Was he?
Yeah.
Huh.
And then he went on to play at UCLA for 2 years, 1969, 1970, and NCAA championships both years?
Yeah, 69 championship, the year that Kareem was there, and then we were the team without in 1970, and we did it again to the surprise of everybody.
Yeah, and that was under, of course, the legendary great coach John Wooden.
Correct.
Probably, I mean, I don't know if anybody would argue this point, but probably the greatest college coach of all time?
He was certainly one of the greatest college coaches. And he was the greatest one I ever played for.
Yeah. And you were back in the NCAA games, you were scoring in the 20s sometimes during those games.
For the NC2A Final Four, yes, I averaged a little over 20. I had a big game in the semifinal in 1969 against Drake. And anyway, so yeah, when somebody else was getting covered, they threw me the ball, and I managed to throw it in the little basket.
Yeah, but John Wooden moved you to the point guard at that time, did he not? Which was a position you were unfamiliar with?
Actually, I played forward in high school and also at JC. Uh-huh. So when I went to Orange Coast College, I ended up also forward, and then at UCLA, they moved me to guard because I was only 6'2 and a half, and we had these forwards that were 6'7, 6'8, 6'9.
Yeah.
And the center, you know, with Kareem and so forth.
Yeah,
Sidney Worth was 6'9, and so no place for me at forward at that point.
No. You had great vertical leap back then?
Good vertical leap. Used to spend a lot of time on the beach, played a lot of two-man volleyball down here at Main Beach in Laguna and up and down the coastline of California. And you know, shot a lot of hoops.
You know, and I'll tell my one story, Jim, and I'll tell this. I was a sophomore junior at Estancia High School. Wetzel was my freshman basketball coach. And my buddy was a guy named Jim McCluskey. He was sort of the standout at Estancia that year. And we went over to Orange Coast College, and the coach at the time was Herb Livesey. And we played two-on-two with you and Herb Livesey because he wanted to see, not my skills, trust me, but my buddy Jim McCluskey's skills. And we went two-on-two. And it was an amazing experience because it was just, you know, so interesting to be playing 2-on-2 with John Vallely at that time.
Who won?
Well, I'll have to be honest. I think we did. But
Coach Livesey wasn't prepared, apparently.
Hey, you also played a year or two in the NBA. You got drafted first round. Do I have that correct? With the Atlanta Hawks, you played with, I'm assuming, Pete Maravich at the time?
Pistol and I came in the same time. We were roommates through rookie camp and the first part of the year and then through part of the season in our first year in 1970.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask a little bit. I wanted to backtrack a little bit on some of the players you played with. You know, you talked about Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Sidney Wicks. I'm assuming Curtis Rowe was there around that time. Henry Bibby, Maravich. These are some phenomenal players, right?
Yes.
What did you think of Maravich? And his
Pistol
skills.
Was a superstar athlete. He was 6'5". He's faster than anybody from end line to end line. But what he didn't learn in high school and in college, I think, was how to deal with a team.
Right.
And consequently, when he got to the Atlanta Hawks the same year that I was there, there was a lot of difficulty on that team. There were some big stars on the team, Lou Hudson, Walt Hazard, Walt Bellamy, and Bill Bridges. And Pistol had a tough time communicating with others. Others had a tough time communicating with him.
Yeah, and I think he was the highest paid athlete at the time in the NBA when he came in.
Well, I was never privy to the amount of income any other player was making, but I'm sure it was big because his notoriety out of college was gigantic.
Yeah, and really, if you know the Pistol Pete Maravich story, a tragic story, he became a Christian ultimately.
Yes.
And he was playing at a church. He went around the country speaking at various events for the youth, and he was playing at a church. And somebody, you know, he just finished a 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 or 4-on-4. Somebody asked him how he was feeling. He said, great, and he died right there. Yeah.
Buddy of mine, Ralph Drollinger, who played at UCLA just after me, is in the Christian ministry. He actually works up in the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and works on a ministry with congressmen and so forth. So he happened to be there that day that Pistol dropped.
No kidding.
And I didn't get to meet Pistol after he made his conversion to Christianity, and it would have been nice to have had a visit with him after that.
I'm sure it would have,
I think a lot of demons were probably removed from his life as a result of his change of direction.
Totally. He was a phenomenal basketball player, great skills, great passer, had those no looks, the behind-the-back pass. I still occasionally go back on YouTube some of his stuff, and I'm still overwhelmed by what he was able to do on the court. Yeah, he was amazing, Jim.
John, we've talked a number of times about this, but
For our listeners and viewers, can you talk a little bit about when you first met Coach Wooden and what drew you to UCLA and that sort of process of assimilating to what at that point had become a pretty good program?
Well, I was being recruited by several schools out of junior college, including SC and Washington and Nebraska and Utah and some of the other big schools. But Coach Wooden had invited me up to the campus, and we walked around the campus and just looked at the great UCLA plant, shall we say. And I was really impressed with everything that was going on there. I had a chance to come into UCLA as a JC transfer and play with the greatest college player of all time in Lou Alcindor and be coached by John Wooden, who had won several championships prior to this little surf kid from Newport, volleyball player and basketball player that was coming up to UCLA. And so some people would say, well, many people said, you'll never get to play at UCLA. So what an opportunity it would be to go and play for Coach Wooden. So I asked him on the campus that day as we were looking out over it. I said, hey, Coach, if I come here, would there be a chance that I could play at UCLA? And he said, John, he says, I can promise you a chance. But you'll have to earn it.
Good for him.
And so then part of my makeup, I guess, is I'll never know if I could play at this level unless I took a shot at it. So I decided to go there and turned out well.
Was part of your decision or influenced by the coach?
Certainly it was influenced. I wasn't as familiar with the concepts that I would learn once I got to UCLA and dealing with challenge and change, which are certainly the concepts of the pyramid of success that he taught. I had no idea that I would be getting set up to deal with some of the biggest challenges in life by being with Coach Wooden. And I was just unaware of how great of an education I would receive there.
Yeah. Were you awestruck when you first started taking the court for your first practice with the great players around you, or did you assimilate pretty easily?
Definitely awestruck. I remember coming across half court. Of course, I was on the last team the first few days that I was out there because you started at the bottom and worked your way up. And having to play against Lou Alcindor was no fun. I crossed half court in a fast break situation. Kareem was the last guy down there. I thought I'd pull up and shoot the jumper at the top of the key. And this 7'2" dude comes flying out of the sky and knocks the ball to the other end of the court. He chases it down. He beats me to the other end and lays it in. And so, yeah, I was a little awestruck. But I could shoot a jump shot, and so eventually I worked my way into the first team up there.
When did you get the nickname Money? Because I laugh now because that's such a, you know, you associated me with Michael Jordan and, you know, movies and things. And, you know, I think, were you the original Money?
The Money Man. Yeah. Coach used to teach us, surround yourself with people and ideas that you respect. And I had some buddies from Orange Coast College that were more party friends than anything else. They also went to UCLA. They were on the crew team at Orange Coast and eventually at UCLA. But when Dick Enberg was announcing the UCLA games, one of my friends went down and said to Dick that John Vallely was known as the money man at Orange Coast College because he made baskets in big games. And darned if I didn't make some baskets in big games at UCLA. So the money man thing stuck. It was all because of a friend named Carl Marcellus who went down and introduced this concept to Dick Enberg. That's how these crazy stories get started.
Lou Alcindor, very distinctive. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, very distinctive personality. I got to believe Sidney Wicks was on the other end of the spectrum of that sort of personality.
Well, Sidney was an individual. He was one of the most physically talented players in college basketball at the time at 6'9", 235, quick, great speed. Could do literally everything on the basketball court. But being that size and growing into such a substantive person physically, at an early age, everything revolved around Sidney. Mm-hmm. So not unlike Pistol, he came into UCLA expecting things to work around him. And becoming a team player was a difficult part for Sidney. His sophomore year, even though he was so talented, he sat a lot of the time on the bench, came off the bench, and contributed greatly. But it wasn't until his junior and senior years that he made the greatest contributions to UCLA basketball.
Yeah. You know, I went online, and there's a video of Johnny Wooden speaking about you. And he said he was, John Vallely, one of the finest young men I've had the pleasure of coaching. That's an incredible compliment coming from a man like John Wooden, don't you believe?
Well, it's greatly appreciated. Again, surround yourself with people and ideas. I always, people say things like that, and I think of my wife because I know that Coach would have recruited her if she had as good a jump shot as I did. But since I was married to this great woman, character was certainly something that I had to step into and learn great things from not only Coach, but from this lady. And so it's a nice compliment from Coach.
A lot of the players, and, you know, Bill Walton comes to mind because, you know, you and I have talked to Bill. You know Bill very well. Butted heads with Coach, and they didn't necessarily adopt everything that Coach was trying to present to them, at least initially, everything from the socks to the shoelaces to practice habits, study habits, etc. What was your relationship initially like, and did you ever butt heads with Coach?
I didn't really butt heads from Coach because I was really nobody coming into a system that was very established. So I had to earn my way, and it turns out that since we had Lou Alcindor at center and Lynn Shackelford at forward and Curtis Rowe at the other forward, Kenny Heights at guard, there was an established player group there that I was entering into. So I was happy just to get my shots, and I didn't have those sorts of confrontations. But I know Bill, and Bill's a good friend, Walton and Sidney, and they just had their own ideas about things. Sidney thought that he should be able to wear his facial hair any way he wanted to, so he came into practice with a mustache and big side, mutton chop sideburns and a goatee at the first day of practice, and out there shooting hoops, and Sidney and Curtis are one in, and I watch Coach Wooden come out on the court, and he goes straight down to Sidney. Sidney, you know my rules about facial hair. And Sidney says, yeah, I know your rules, Coach, but this is the way I want to look this year. You know, you don't have the big guy this year, and you're going to need me. And Coach was really irate at that time, and he said, now, Sidney, you know, we don't have the big guy this year, and we could really use you. But I'll tell you something, Sidney. You have exactly 15 minutes to get up into that training room, get all the facial hair shaved off, and get back down here on the court ready to go. And if you don't, you won't be playing for the Bruins this year. All of a sudden, you saw this 6'9" man climbing up Poly Pavilion steps, going up to the training room where Ducky Drake would help him get shaved up and ready to go. It was a different era.
Yeah, different era.
Different
Beautiful.
Era. But you know, one more thing.
Yeah, no.
Marcus Johnson interviewed me recently. He asked me, he says, would the culture that was created at UCLA in those days, would the teaching that took place for those athletes still apply today when people come in with very different looks? And so I would say that the basics or the fundamentals, the principles of living life would transfer from one generation to the next and to the next. Things like loyalty and cooperation and teamwork and developing the skills and working hard and being enthusiastic, cultivating the ability to make decisions and think alone. These are things that transfer from one generation to the next. While Coach may have had to adapt to the tats and to the earrings, I think he probably would have, but I think he still would have demanded the same sort of teamwork that was on those teams at UCLA.
Makes sense, yeah.
For sure.
You know, you went to see Coach Wooden 2 days before he passed. You have a story to share there. I wonder if you can kind of just brief us on what that experience was like and maybe kind of end this before we go to a commercial on what was one of the greatest lessons you ever learned from the man.
Received a notice that Coach Wooden was not long for this world from my friend Mike Warren, who played just before me at UCLA. He said, Coach, doesn't look like it's going to be much longer. If you want to see him, go quickly. I called Karen up, my wife. I said, Karen, we got to go see Coach. He's not going to be around much longer. So let's go and pay our respects. So driving up from Newport Beach, where I live, and going up to UCLA was about an hour drive, and I was thinking, what do you say to a person who's been a mentor at this level? What would you say to him? And I really didn't know what to say. There would be so much to say, and I didn't know whether he'd be asleep or awake because he was in and out of coma. Well, anyway, we walked into the Reagan Hospital where Coach was laying, and he happened to be alert at that moment. And so Karen and I walked in arm, and I said, Coach, this is Team Valerie, you know, the one that you helped put together years ago when I was a stupid little 21-year-old and didn't know what to do about this beautiful girl. And I was going off to the NBA, and I was full of myself and going to be a basketball player doing well. And I just didn't know what to do about Karen, and I came to you, and I asked you what to do. And I came here because I just wanted to thank you for helping me make that decision. Well, Coach Wooden at the time knew that some question was coming, and he stuck his finger in my chest and he says, you marry that girl. And we'd been there for over a couple of years at that point, and so he got to know Karen, and I think he probably thought more of her than he did of me. But he helped make that decision for me, and the other one was that he taught us about the principles in the Pyramid of Success that would help deal with challenge and change in one's life. Challenges and changes are what we all deal with for the balance of our lives once we're out of sports. And so I said, Coach, I just want to thank you for all that you taught us that would help us off the court. And those things, as you know, have helped me to get through the loss of a loved one to cancer, to fight my own fight against cancer, and certainly keeping your balance through all the trials and tribulations in life are what you taught, and I'm extremely grateful for that.
You know, by the way, this is KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. Oh.
Just to finish.
Please, I'm sorry.
Then Karen and I were standing there, and he was this big smile when I was thanking him about this, and I actually go into the story about how my wife and I, I'd asked her to come and live with me in Atlanta, and she said, is that your best offer? And she followed it up with, if that's how you feel about our relationship after a couple of years, perhaps you could go to Atlanta and come back, and once you get back, call me up when you get back in Newport. If I'm still available, maybe we could go out. So it was really a comeuppance. It was a growth time for me. Coach was teaching me, this woman was teaching me, and I had to make some big decisions. But Coach Wooden was a huge mentor to so many of us,
and not just the players. I mean, people around the world. Honestly, really admired the man through his books, through his teachings. I had the Pyramid of Success in my room when I was growing up. I don't know any athlete when I was growing up who didn't have that in his room or somewhere in his room.
It's so easy just to take a quick glance at that Pyramid of Success. It was never about winning and losing. It was about controlling those variables in our lives that we can control.
Yeah.
Knowing that there's always going to be someone taller, shorter, someone faster, slower, someone smarter, not as smart. The goal here is just to become the best we're capable of becoming, and then the results will take care of themselves.
So you listen to KX 93.5, Laguna's Only FM. This is Radio Caravan. We're in the studio this morning with John Vallely, former UCLA basketball standout. A few years in the NBA, both Atlanta Hawks and I believe the Houston Rockets, a year or two there.
Yeah.
You talked about the challenges, John. I'm going to make a very abrupt transition, and I apologize for this, but we're sort of down to the last 10 minutes. In 1988, your 9-year-old daughter, Erin, was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, and she passed away several years later. First of all, our condolences for that. You ended up being diagnosed with the sort of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2003. You had your own battles there. I guess my first question for you is, what's the status of your disease?
The status today is I'm 8 years cancer-free, and let's just hope that the DNA and immune system that was contributed to my system in 2006 will continue to maintain its power. That DNA and immune system comes from a guy in Germany, and so I went through a stem cell transplant down in Houston, Texas, at MD Anderson, and so his DNA and immune system were given, dripped into my bloodstream, and so far they're dominating the system, and it's working.
Yeah. I can't imagine, even begin to imagine, what it would be like to lose my daughter at such an early age, and I'm wondering if you sort of relied on any of the lessons or teachings that you learned as an athlete or through Coach Wooden that helped you get through both that time and your own sort of diagnoses.
Well, competitive greatness was something Coach was trying to teach, and that means to be the best that you can be when your best is needed. He said the way you grade yourself is by the peace of mind that you have when you know you've given your best to become the best you're capable of becoming. That was true success, even though the dictionary will define it as the accumulation of wealth or the attainment of some position of power. But this competitive greatness thing can be applied to your responsibilities as a father, as a husband, as a businessman. In fact, for me, finding it even helped me to find a personal relationship with God. And in the matter of dealing with cancer, I think it's really important to have a good foundation for dealing with such stressful circumstances. So when my daughter was diagnosed, it was a terrible time for us. She was 9 years old when she was diagnosed, and she went through many, many surgeries to try to help her survive rhabdomyosarcoma, the disease of the soft muscle tissue. So I found myself each day when I went to the hospital getting on the elevator to go up to be with her, and I'd make this prayer, God, help me to be the best father to this little girl as she goes through this. Help me to say the right things. Help me to be the best husband to my wife. So I simply transferred this competitive greatness thing into being the subject of a father or a husband. So then when you thought about the concepts of the Pyramid of Success, it meant teamwork. Eagerness to sacrifice personal interest for the glory of this little child as she sits in this bed and does this fight. That means teamwork. you have to learn the communication skills to survive in that environment. You have to cultivate the ability to make decisions and think alone based on the information that comes in. Your teammates are the nurses. Your teammates are the people who come and clean the room. And you need to be complimenting a teammate who helps you achieve. So there I was as this father fighting against an enemy with my daughter, an enemy we couldn't see. And so we had to rely on those things that we could control. And so the concepts that Coach Wooden was teaching in basketball really applied to this personal situation of dealing with the difficult circumstances of a child diagnosed with cancer. I found it hugely helpful. And then at the end of the day, all you want to do is have the peace of mind that you've given your best effort to be the best you can be in each of those circumstances. When it was all said and done, when we lost Aaron, I remember sitting with Karen and thinking, we played the game at the highest level. It's just that in that part of our life, we didn't get the result we wanted. Had we not played the game at the highest level in our minds, chances are there could have been other circumstances that would have entered into our life. Most couples get divorced during tough circumstances like that. Many people turn to drugs and alcohol. But we felt we had played the game at the highest level. We had peace about that. And so it helped us keep our balance, even though it was certainly the greatest loss one could ever go through.
And then, John, obviously from that, I know personally, because this is how we came to know each other, is you and Karen have been amazing in your fight for pediatric cancer research and PCRF in particular. So if you can talk about how you channeled that tragedy into all the great work you've done over the years to support that great cause.
Well, I think we always think that cancer is going to strike somebody else, but it's going to strike one out of three adults if you live a normal, full life. It strikes children in a great way because it is the largest killer of children under the age of 18 due to disease. The biggest killer to disease. Now, it doesn't happen a lot. It's one in 350 or something like that will get some form of cancer. But there are a lot of children being diagnosed every day, and you never think it's going to happen to you. And there we were, you know, playing pro sports, building a business, having a good life as a family, and we now had a child diagnosed with cancer. Well, I was asked to join the board of Pediatric Cancer Research Foundation. One of the people who was working with the outfit came into our room in Children's Hospital in Orange County and asked if I'd be interested in going on the board after meeting me and talking to me. And so we decided that this is a place where we could make a difference. Even if we were late to the table, we thought that we could make a difference here. And so when we lost our child, Aaron, at the age of 12, only 40% of the children were surviving their disease. So today, that survival rate is now up over 80%. So in some way, we feel like we've had a hand in changing the world.
Absolutely. One of the things you've done, which I think is great, and it's been your personal passion for the last few years, is
Dribble
for the Cure, which you changed your relationship with UCLA, and you put them in a right direction as well as helping this great cause. So talk about the Dribble.
Dribble for the Cure is a one-day event. It's a few hours in the morning on a Sunday. It's a great event that I learned about through others and brought to UCLA. Dan Guerrero, the athletic director, embraced the concept. It's where children sign up for $10, team captains are $25. We go out and get sponsors in the neighborhood. We have approximately 500 to 600 kids that will take a basketball and dribble from Drake Stadium out around the campus and back into the Poly Pavilion or the Wooden Center. And they get to go on this little trail of dribbling a ball around the campus with the great UCLA men's and women's basketball team and coaches, and some of the alums participate as well. And it's just a great experience of seeing what it's like to be at the great UCLA plant with the great stars that are there. And so over the last 7 years, we've raised close to $1 million now in children's cancer funds that go also to Mattel Children's Hospital and to about 10 other grantees of PCRF.
Last question. You got 10 seconds to answer this. It's sort of a throwaway question. I was looking this up, and one of the cornerstones of Wooden's Pyramid of Success is enthusiasm. In a one-liner, what are you enthused about these days?
First of all, enthusiasm is the electricity of life. I would encourage any youngster that might be listening or anybody doing anything with their life to find their passion, find a place where they can enjoy themselves, might be here in the radio or TV room. It could be speaking in some way. It could be all the different professional parts of our potential lives, and find your passion and enjoy it, pursue it, and then try to find your own personal best in doing that, and then you don't have to worry about the results. They'll take care of themselves.
Awesome.
You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. This is Radio Caravan. We've been speaking this morning with John Vallely. John, thank you so much for coming in, my friend.
Beautiful. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. April, take us out with a little music, please. Up next, The Friendship Show.
That he told you. Where was my hand in this red crime? How did he say that I kissed your shoulder? Never mind, emphasize. Did it ever occur to you? Never mind, emphasize. Did it ever occur to you? That the wrong that he said was done, I could never do. Tell me, why would you believe another man's word?